The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Now, let's bring you up to speed on what actually is happening in the Middle East. We're joined by Sean Bell, former fighter pilot, military analyst and co-host of the Red Matrix podcast. Sean, it's day five of this conflict. Where are we at, do you think, at this stage? If you can look at things in the round, are we looking at quite a long period of conflict, do you think, at this stage?
Yeah, good evening, Shane. Good evening, Ciara. I wish I was joining you sometimes on a slightly more positive story. Yeah. But day five, I think if I was to provide an overview, it would be that Iran's air defense systems have been rolled back. Israel's been pounding the leadership and lots of targets, military targets. And it looks like Iran is starting to run a bit short of missiles, but it seems to be firing them in a somewhat haphazard manner to try and impact as many regional countries as possible in the hope, I think, that they will put pressure on America to back off. But I think quite the opposite is happening. I think if there is a ray of light, it is the rate of consumption of weapons probably is not going to be tolerable and sustainable for more than 2 or 3 weeks. So I suspect in the coming days, we're going to see some efforts, if not by Iran, then we'll probably see a statement by President Trump declaring victory. But we're not there yet.
Mm. President Trump at pains last night in his press conference to say, oh, no, this wasn't Israel. If anything, it was me kind of pushing this and bringing Israel along. What is your take on Trump's strategy? Was he pushed into this by Israel? Does he have a medium term, never mind a long term strategy?
Well, you're asking me to get inside President Trump's head, and if I could do that, I'd be a famous man. I think the reason this is blown up slightly is that if you were to do a conventional military campaign, the first thing you'd do is the Air Force would go in and roll back the air defenses of Iran, and that would almost certainly be American air assets, and that would probably happen at 2 or 3 in the morning. You'll recall that the first attacks here happened about 9:30 in the morning in pure daylight. And what looks like happened is that the Israelis, because they have great intelligence, infiltrated the Iranian leadership, that they suddenly found they knew where all the key leaders were at a particular moment in time that morning, and said to America, we've got to go now. If we don't do, we'll never get these people together. As a result, I think the starting pistol was probably fired by Israel rather than America, and America's sort of been playing a bit of catch-up. But you know, as a military guy, you look at their ability not only to track but also target all of the key Iranian leadership. That was a very effective operation.
Last question. Pete Hegseth saying Iran is toast and they know it. Are they toast, or is it way more complicated than that? I heard a metaphor today being used. It might even have been you who used it, about like the head being cut off, but many other heads reappearing.
Yeah, that's the classic Hydra option. I think the problem here is in a conventional war, you have a winner and a loser. Iran will never win. It's taking on a major superpower. But all it has to do is not lose. And unless America is prepared to put boots on the ground, which it looks unlikely to do, ultimately, Iran just has to keep its head down. Eventually, America will run out of steam. And as long as Iran still survives, so does the regime. So I don't think Iran is going to be beaten. I think that we are going to see, though, like the Iranian frigate that was sunk earlier on today, the RS Dina, we're going to see their military steadily picked apart. And then they'll hope that Iran now seeks to have some talks and starts taking negotiations about the uranium enrichment rather more seriously than they were.
Is that likely?
Well, again, you only have to lose so many people and so much capability before ultimately the Iranians have cleaned the leadership to stay in power. And the more they are weakened militarily, the more fragile that looks. I wouldn't be at all surprised if their number one priority is to keep the regime in power. If that means they have to negotiate, I suspect that is an option.
I'm sorry, I know I said that was the last question, but it begs another question. Is regime change, is that now pretty much already gone as a realistic option?
Shane, it depends what you mean. The regime has all been killed, the leadership. So there will be a change in regime, whether it's actually the whole management. And that brings in, just as you say, a hydra, different folks, but wearing the same badges or not. You won't get regime change. This is my humble opinion, by purely using air power. You have to put boots on the ground. America won't do that. So I don't think we're going to see an effective change of regime, but then we might see the regime more pliable to negotiation.
On this show, as entrepreneurs, we often talk about the courage it takes to start something from scratch. Every successful brand begins with a vision, a purpose, and someone willing to take a chance on an idea. And while every founder's journey is different, many share the same determination to overcome obstacles, innovate, and build something meaningful from the ground up. That's why I always enjoy hearing founder stories, because behind every product is a real person who has invested time, energy, and passion into building something meaningful. Walmart is helping customers discover products from thousands of small brands while giving founders opportunities to grow, reach new communities, and share the stories behind their businesses. By making it easier to discover these brands, Walmart helps connect customers with innovative products and the entrepreneurs whose passion, resilience, and creativity help bring them to market. So whether you're an entrepreneur yourself or a dream driver looking to be inspired, it's exciting to see more opportunities for small brands to be discovered. Visit Walmart.com to learn more about the small brands and founder stories available in your community.
Okay, Sean Bell, former fighter pilot, military analyst and co-host of the Red Matrix podcast. Thank you indeed for talking to the Hard Shoulder. Let's bring in Dan Mulhall, former ambassador of Ireland to the United States. Dan, a couple of interesting developments over the last day or so. The French president today, Emmanuel Macron, of course, joining the Spanish prime minister in questioning the legality of strikes on Iran. Basically, Macron said the strikes in Iran that began on Saturday were conducted outside of international law and that Paris cannot approve of them. Now, both those countries have gone a lot further than Ireland has. I mean, we were speaking to Jack Chambers here a little earlier. We've spoken to numerous ministers on News Talk over recent days. They're all very much sitting on the fence, talking about their deep concern about what has happened. Can you explain to us what is the thinking? Why are we so reluctant to say what everybody knows, that these strikes were illegal?
Well, you're right to say that everybody knows that these strikes were not in accordance with international law. But the problem with international law is there's no enforcement mechanism. Domestic law has the Garda, the courts, the prison service, and ultimately the army to enforce it. There's nobody out there that can enforce international law. So the question is, what do you do? Do you stand up and you know, have a go at the Americans for breaking international law and then predictably be the target of retaliation by the Americans in some form or other, economic sanctions or, you know, tariffs or whatever, which they've threatened on the Spaniards. So, you know, for Ireland, it's a very difficult balancing act. I mean, look at the balancing act that Keir Starmer is having to conduct at the moment, trying to keep a special relationship together while not wanting to go all the way with Donald Trump. So, you know, for our government, it is a, you know, there's a domestic pressure, obviously, from the opposition parties who are pushing hard for us to take a more vigorous line. And then there are the constraints. And small countries have more constraints operating on them than large countries have. That's just the reality of life. The only country in the world that probably has no constraints would be China, because they're too big to have to worry about constraints. So they've been very clear. They've been very hard-hitting in condemning the American position. But most European countries have decided to keep their heads down, mainly because they're concerned about losing the American security umbrella, which is so vital for European security now and in the future.
Okay, but there will be a view here, and I've heard it expressed, and many of my friends have expressed it to me as well. Look, Spain have taken a stance. They've said, this is how the Spanish Prime Minister, this is how humanity's great disaster start. You cannot play Russian roulette with the destiny of millions, and basically saying no to war. There are many people in Ireland who believe we should take a similar stand, regardless of what it costs us.
Look, as I said, it's a difficult dilemma for the government, because there's no absolute winner in this one, because if you take a stand, there are consequences to that. If you don't take a stand, you know, you get criticised domestically. So I think the government's trying at the moment to kind of walk a kind of a delicate path of you know, calling for de-escalation. I mean, at the moment, it seems to me, the two most important things now are not whether this is a breach of international law or not, that you know, that boat has sailed. sailed. You know, it is a breach of international law. What can we do about it? Where it's at the moment is, how long is this conflict going to last? Because the longer it lasts, the more severe its consequences will be. And secondly, what happens after the conflict ends? What happens to Iran? We don't want to see Iran as a failed state falling apart in the way Iraq did, and potentially creating another flow of migrants looking for refuge in Europe, and creating internal problems right across the European Union. So those are the things that I think we should be focused on. And when the Taoiseach goes to Washington next month, I think that's where he should be trying to place the emphasis, rather than trying to be a judge and jury over whether this is a breach of international law or not.
But just looking here, Mark Carney has said it appears these actions, the Canadian Prime Minister, these actions are inconsistent with international law. Does it reach the point? And look, I understand what the Irish government is trying to do. And, it's easy to say we should bang the table and so on, but there are other issues at stake. But does it reach a point where we start to look, or the government starts to look a bit ridiculous if it keeps sticking to that line, particularly when more and more countries are actually calling out the war as being, or the conflict as being illegal, and the actions as being illegal?
Well, I think the longer this war goes on, and the more you see civilian casualties in Iran, because the Iranians are taking terrible pounding at the moment. They're already trying to leave the country in large numbers, I understand. So the longer it goes on, and the more the suffering of the ordinary Iranian people who are not necessarily supporters of the regime becomes apparent, I think the pressure will mount on governments, including our own, to take a somewhat more robust stance. I'd be looking towards the European Union and to Ireland, maybe trying to see if they can argue for a more robust line from the European Union, because that's where our strength lies. If the European Union speaks out on something like this, then it's more likely to have an effect. But the problem is that there are some European countries that are very close to Israel, like Germany, for example. Yeah. And the problem with this in many ways is that if this was another country, it would be a different story. But Iran has basically no friends because of the way that it's behaved over the last 50 years, almost 50 years since the Islamic Republic came into being.
No, so they have
no
point.
Friends. And no one wants to be seen to be a supporter or a sympathizer with the Iranian regime because of all the things they've done over the last 50 years.
Let's say we did take a stand. Let's say we went the road of the Spanish. What's the potential fallout in relation to Donald Trump and Ireland? How bad could things get?
Well, I mean, it's impossible to say for sure, because Donald Trump is not someone whose actions are predictable. You know, in a normal,
but worst case scenario, I mean, could he say? Could he say to the tech bros, you know what, guy? You know, you stop investing in Ireland. Is that a potential risk?
A potential risk, but I think a more likely risk to us would be that he would decide to slap on a special tariff on Irish exports to the United States, which would be crippling for our economy, and which would also start to make the U.S. companies in Ireland worry about the future. So, the stakes are pretty high. Now, I'm not saying for certain that that's what he would do. I think that's probably an extreme end of the spectrum. But with somebody as unpredictable and as instinctive as Donald Trump, you can't rule out quite extreme reactions to something that we might think is a reasonable point of view. He would not see it like that. And therefore, we're looking at the most powerful man in the world, and someone who has shown that he has a capacity and a willingness and a desire to use his power fully over the last year. And no doubt, getting in the sights of someone like Donald Trump is a risky endeavor, especially for a small country like Ireland that has so many interests in our relationship with the United States. So I'm inclined to believe that our best option is to try to, when he goes over there, to try to talk to him, to try to put our point of view across, hopefully behind closed doors, to try and argue for a quick end to the conflict and for some kind of effort to make sure that Iran ends up as a better country and not a problem for the region in the years ahead.
Dan Mulhall, former ambassador of Ireland to the United States, thank you indeed for talking to The Hard Shoulder.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.